This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
On Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9 with Macca and Paul. Our next guest is the federal member for Wills, and in fact my local member, Peter Khalil. Good morning, Peter.
Morning, Macca. Morning, Paul. How are you both?
Look, pretty good.
Very good. Thanks, Peter.
Look, I wanted to kick off by actually delegating the first question to Paul, because he was asking me this off air and earlier in the show. Off you go, Paul.
Yeah, Peter. We were talking earlier the fact that you sit on a number of subcommittees in government. One of those, you know, in related to security, and Lydia Thorpe is now departing probably one of those committees. But I was interested to read, both in the UK and in Australia, the Chinese have been trying to recruit our Top Gun pilots to help train the Chinese pilots. And clearly with a looming tensions in Taiwan, it was a little disturbing. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, that's an interesting question, Paul. I've just got back from Indo-Pacific Command at Pearl Harbor, and I was actually speaking before this story broke with a 3-star Air Force general, and I actually asked the question. I said, you know, with the difference between fifth-generation fighters and fourth-generation, if listeners have been watching Top Gun, they'll know what I mean. Is there really a difference between the pilot's skill that can make up the difference, if you like? And do the Chinese pilots have, because of their cultural differences and growing up in a communist regime, do they have less initiative, less decision-making, maneuverability, I suppose? It's at that really tactical level, do Western pilots, for example, outperform them? And they didn't know. And then this story broke, and then I got my answer, which is that the Chinese Communist Party obviously have seen maybe a weakness in their pilots and are trying to get some advanced training from Western pilots. So I think that's where it's coming from. I think it's quite a problem. I think the British government is actually moving to put strong penalties in place around that. It's an interesting one because it's a commercial, like they're a retired pilot, for example, and they're being offered a commercial payment, if you like, to go and train Chinese pilots. But I think in the space where you look at national security, this obviously has a huge impact, and they're passing on doctrine or tactics and things that could be detrimental to our pilots.
Yeah, it's know-how. I mean, and that's got a commodity. I know it's a price, and you don't want to stop anyone earning a living. However, it's concerning because you could be giving away the how-to if you need to try and do that.
That's right. And I know our government, the Defence Minister, announced a review into the situation in Australia, whether any Australian pilots, or some media that some Australian pilots have been approached. It was interesting that Andrew Hastie, the shadow defence minister, the opposition defence minister, you know, made a bit of a song and dance about this. And my response in the media was, well, you were in government for 9 years. If you knew about it, why didn't you take action?
It's kind of ironic
about it now.
It's all your fault, Peter. Like, it's
that's right.
It's, and you know, history shows us there was some American and British pilots just prior to the Second World War, RAF and Army Air Force pilots, that actually trained Japanese pilots. Some of them, you
that's
know.
That's right. It's historical.
Yeah, who then, you know, visited Hawaii uninvited. I think the challenge here is that one of the big differences, of course, is the Western world's air forces are voluntary. The Chinese is a conscription air force. Now, I'm not saying people don't join the air force or the defence forces in China on a voluntary basis, but predominantly it is a conscription army. It's interesting that the US Navy has, certainly the commander in this region, has been on record highlighting that difference between a volunteer military force and a conscripted one. Of course, we're seeing, you know, in the Ukraine, the different outcomes there. So I think it's an interesting one to follow, and I don't know how you actually stop people from taking up those opportunities, but it's the information they may share that's the most damaging, isn't it, Peter?
That's right, and there's going to be a judgment call about whether that information is so sensitive that it is detrimental to our national security and our national interests. Yeah. I actually met with Admiral Aquilino. You referenced the Indo-Pacific commander. He is a US Navy pilot. He's a four-star admiral. And you know those, you know, you watch Top Gun and there's the, sort of the cliche of the, the A-list pilot or whatever. He's that guy. You know, very New Yorker. You know, get things done kind of guy. You know, he came out in his aviator suit and his name is Lung, not Maverick. But a very smart guy as well. And he understands that his whole perspective is about deterring crisis and deterring conflict, making sure that we work together to maintain the stability and the security of the entire region and dissuade others from moving towards a crisis point or a conflict point, and that's really important.
I was going to say, does that make you a quasi Top Gun? If you're rubbing shoulders with such esteemed company, does that make you a quasi Top Gun?
Paul, I think if I got in one of those planes, there would be some mechanical difficulties because of my weight.
Probably from me.
I wouldn't make the cut. But I was just saying, people might misunderstand that when you do defence and you prepare capabilities for defence, you're actually doing it to deter conflict. You want to make sure that we don't move to a conflict situation. You know, for a trading nation like Australia, where our imports and our exports, you know, 90% of which go through, you know, maritime, you know, approaches and so on, having that security in the region, that stability is actually quite important for our economic prosperity, frankly.
It is. I want to ask you about tax, Peter. We've seen, I'm not going to ask you whether or not the government's going to revisit the Stage 3 tax cuts because they're not going to be revisited in the budget, but I suspect they might be down the track. The Treasurer has said the cost of those Stage 3 tax cuts has increased by $11 billion. $11 billion. Mm. Does that surprise you? Or is it because of, I suppose, income growth and, you know...
That's what it is, yeah.
Yeah, it's just getting higher, isn't it?
Because the actual... The way that the coalition set up the bill or the law itself was to reduce the tax bracket, you know, reduce, for example, top end from 32.5 to 30. So if you get more people in employment, you're getting more tax coming in and so on. So it does shift the costings in that respect. Look, my issue with that whole episode was that the coalition basically structured in a way that the tax cuts and the tax relief for low and middle income earners, you know, from 45,000 to 180, was tied together with the benefits that would go to higher income earners. And if you said no to it, you're basically denying, I think, you know, 80, 90% of Australians those tax cuts. But at the same time, of course, there is this part of the tax cuts, a big part chunk of it that go to very high income earners. And there's this big debate going on about whether that's appropriate going forward. As you said, they're not coming into play, the Stage 3, until 2024. So I think the Treasurer is right in saying, look, my focus in this budget, and particularly this mini budget in October, is cost of living relief and all of the reforms that we need to do, given the fact that, you know, there's huge pressures on the budget. We've left with a $1 trillion debt, and you're seeing even the interest bill on our debt is mad. It's like 17%, 17.5% of increases there on that. So there's massive pressures. NDIS has to be paid for. There's indexation rises for the highest for 12 years on the pension and job seeker, which is a good thing for those people. But the point is that it's adding further pressure on the budget. And he has some big decisions to make and will be revealing on Tuesday night. My view on tax reform, Macca, is that, and I've been arguing this publicly for a number of years now, is that there is a big space of reform within multinational tax avoidance. A lot of these big multinational companies either offshore their headquarters in low tax or no tax jurisdictions, you know, some island off in the Caribbean where they pay no taxes, but they're making the profits here. And they end up basically avoiding paying tax in the country in which they're making, you know, their profits on their business. And that is unacceptable. I mean, the end result of that, as well as some clever accounting that they do where they, you know, load up subsidiaries with debt in order to do tax write-offs in the country as well. The end result of that is some of these big multinationals are making, you know, $800 billion, $1.5 billion in Australia, and paying 5 cents on the dollar.
Mm.
Whereas your local small business person is, you know, or your wage earner is paying 30%, of their taxes. So it's unfair. It's not equitable, and they need to be called to account. And then, and the OECD is working on this. There is an international effort to try and work this out because of the transnational complications. And Australia needs to be front and centre on that. And I know Jim is really keen on that.
While we're talking about tax, Peter, we understand the level of debt. We understand that the tax system needs a big overhaul because it's not fit for purpose. But I wrote to you recently about a proposal, around something Treasury and the government are looking at. I am not a fan, as you know, of the current system of franking credits. I think it is over generous. And, I argued that case on air, actually, before the last election with Chris Bowen. He didn't like what I said, but anyway. we've got, the Treasury is proposing a relatively small change to how franking credits work. And it's a complex issue. It's around capital raising and other things. By all means, the government has a right to look at this. It didn't flag this in the election. What troubles me, Peter, is this legislation or this proposal is to be retrospective. Retrospective. That is a very, very bad idea. If you want to change the law, change it. But don't change the law, make it retrospective and make people pay for something that was legal. And we're only talking about we're not even talking about $100 million a year here. So why retrospective, Peter? Why retrospective?
Well, can I confess that I haven't looked at that particular tax policy area? I'm certainly not an expert in the area either. You probably know more than me about tax reform and tax policy. But on the principle of retrospectivity, I am very averse to laws that go backwards.
Yeah.
It's just basically, it's bad practice. But I don't know the circumstances of this one. I can certainly, I'm going off to Canberra tomorrow night for budget week, and it's one of the things I'll be looking at that you've raised it. But I don't like, from a public policy standpoint, retrospectivity in legislation.
Yeah, it's a bad road to go down. Look, Peter, thanks. I always appreciate your time, and I think, we're going to be, the budget comes out on Tuesday night. We've got a Victorian election coming up. There's no shortage of topics, but it's always great to talk to you.
We could have chatted for another hour with you, Peter.
Easily.
There's so much on our list for you.
Thank you, Paul. That's very kind of you. And I like how you let out. I noticed your British accent, and you let out with a question about the UK. I met with the High Commissioner yesterday in Canberra, and we're doing a lot of work with the UK. But you're an Aussie now, aren't you, Paul?
Yeah, I'm a fully paid up blue passport holder now. Although I was having tea with the British consulate up in Sydney just a few months back. Actually, we obviously move in the same circles, Peter.
There you go.
Anyway, we got to go, Peter. Thank you ever so much for joining us this morning.
Yeah, always appreciate it.
Hey. Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Macca.
Thank you.
Take care.
You are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9, with Macca and Paul. We're going to have a couple of messages. Then we have the news. Then it's time for my
op-ed.
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 And
what's it about, Macca? Can you tell us?
Look, it's about equality and religious freedom. And I'll have a few words to say, but we're going to play you back some audio of other people's words and what they said, because I want you, the listener, to make the decision about what they've said. What I think is what I think. What you think is what's important.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.